Astori Publishing presents Dark Ledger. Prologue. Washington, D.C., late April of the oil-hungry year 2025, sinks toward nightfall the way an overworked clerk slips off a stool, slow, inevitable, sighing. Sodium street lamps flare awake along Independence Avenue, turning the marble of the Library of Congress the color of old vellum. Inside, half a dozen tourists dawdle at the exit turnstiles, unaware that three stories below their feet, an archival sub-basement still hums. One fluorescent tube there already flickers, warning of a filament ready to snap, as if the building itself senses the coming fracture in its orderly universe. Across town, in a basement apartment over a shuttered Ethiopian restaurant, Maya Elridge fights with a word count and her own lungs. She tumbles a rescue inhaler between fingers trained for copy editing, exhales, and writes a headline she despises on an article she does not believe matters. A cardboard box marked taxes occupies her coffee table, unopened since January, because the overdue rent reminder glowing on her cracked phone makes any other form of accounting feel frivolous. Her grandfather's fountain pen, kept for luck, though it long ago ran dry, lies beside the laptop. She taps it whenever the cursor stalls, unaware that before dawn, his name will return to her life with the subtlety of a thunderclap. Five blocks north, Layla Osman strides through the glass doors of the Sentinel newsroom, coat flaring like a stage curtain. She scans the big wall monitor where real-time commodity prices crawl in red and green hieroglyphs. Crude is edging upward again, an eighth of a dollar at a time, enough to sour commuter tempers and sweeten executive bonuses. Layla taps the screen, filing away the numbers. She is practiced at reading the weather of capital, though tonight her instinct itches without offering a forecast. With no story to explain the rise, her faith in patterns falters. She messages Maya, mascot piece by noon or bust, then pockets the phone, telling herself a good editor knows when to push and when to wait for the bigger tale her gut insists is forming. Six time zones east, Riyadh's business district glitters like solder beneath desert moonlight. Jamal al-Rashid stands at a 10th-floor window of a tower financed by oil futures and cooled by imported power. A faint ache steals through the old shrapnel scar in his left leg, an ache that visits whenever he waits too long for courage. On a tablet, he scrolls audit columns, numbers meant to be private, numbers whose symmetry hides a manipulation he has traced back farther than the ledgers admit. He closes the file, fingers the silver prayer beads around his wrist, and wonders whether tonight is the night he contacts the American freelancer whose byline once dissected an OPEC arbitration like a surgeon. Her pieces drew harassment, not acclaim, yet they stayed online, proof she is stubborn or broke or both. Jamal decides broken people can still be trustworthy. Sometimes only the cracked let the truth backlight them. Beyond the Potomac, out where the neat suburbs surrender to the dark swell of Virginia Forest, Colonel Victor Kane sights down an obsolete service rifle at paper silhouettes. He fires once, twice, tight grouping, muscle memory unfaded, and lowers the barrel. The tinnitus that dogs him after years of flight decks and gun ranges whistles through the hush. On the bench beside him lies an embossed invitation to next month's Global Energy Forum in Vienna, its seal crisp, its purpose blunt. Advisory panels need decorated officers who understand the less photogenic arts of influence. Kane folds the cardstock precisely and pockets it. He has spent a career making sure certain wheels never stop turning. Lately, those wheels sound to him like grinding bone. The night deepens. Over the district, the air is so still you could balance a secret on it. A Capitol Police cruiser idles near the library loading dock. The driver thumbs headlines, noting only the rise in gas prices. Far below, a lone archivist, young, cash-strapped, oddly reverent, nudges a cart down a canyon of shelves. He selects the wrong box, though he does not yet know it, and a curtain of dust billows like signal smoke. In the swirl, an orange half-melted crayon reveals itself. Embedded in 50-year-old cardboard, as if some child once tried to draw the future and was hurried away. The archivist smiles, the way people smile at mysteries that feel harmless, and unseals the lid. At that precise moment, traffic lights across the city slip to blinking yellow, while technicians patch a substation fault. A glitch, nothing more, yet it sends a visible shiver through intersections, a ripple of brake lights and muttered curses. Hairline cracks seldom announce their importance. They simply wait for weight to settle. Maya, having filed her reluctant article, decides she is owed one midnight walk to banish screen burn and insomnia. She steps onto the sidewalk just as the lamps return to steady green. The evening smells of rain not yet arrived. She does not notice the second, darker sedan parked half a block away, engine warm but lights off. Kane, miles distant, holsters the rifle and glances at his muted phone, noting a calendar alert he cannot name without wincing. Jamal in Riyadh composes an encrypted message and hesitates over the send icon. Layla leans back, headphones slipping, sensing silence where there should be chatter atop the market feed. Below them all, seven onion skin pages slide free of a collapsing folder. Fountain pen ink flares beneath fluorescent glare, a signature curling with bygone confidence. Alden P. Elridge. The archivist's heartbeat stumbles, the way a metronome misses count when a finger touches the pendulum. Somewhere overhead, a ballast whines louder and then with a brittle pop goes dark. For the length of one held breath, the capital is balanced on the rim of discovery, and the night, patient, waiting, tilts. End of prologue. The fluorescent ballast above stack sub B whined like a trapped mosquito, needling straight through the archivist's molars. He, adjunct collections associate, though the library preferred that euphemism to intern, hunched between shelves no tourist ever saw, nitrile gloves squeaking when he flexed his fingers. One box left before closing. The crumbling label bled dust when he pinched it. 1945 blurred to a charcoal smear, and a sneeze echoed down the concrete canyon. Wrong shelf. Post-war migration files belonged here, not Truman-era policy miscellany. He should have logged the anomaly and wheeled it upstairs, but curiosity is a deviant muscle. The lid sighed apart, revealing legal folders, a mint-green steno pad, and strangest, half a melted orange crayon fused to a tab, evidence of some long-ago trespass. Seven onion-skin pages lay on top, carbon impressions crisp enough to read. Paragraph 2. Compensation struck through. Stabilization inked above in fountain pen flare. At the bottom of page 7, a signature unscrolled with antique flourish, Alden P. Elridge. The archivist's pulse skipped. Elridge, footnote economist, presumed dead after Bretton Woods. Yet here was his name beneath language hinting at price fixing decades ahead of OPEC. 2054. 6 minutes to closing. The workroom lights upstairs already dimmed. He snapped a phone photo, regretted the flash, then slid the pages into a Mylar sleeve. By the lobby, sweat pooled inside his gloves. Noble intent faltered. Instead of cataloging the find, he marked the sleeve temp for review, tucked it into his satchel, and stepped into the spring night, recruited by guilt and ambition in equal measure. 9 hours later, the email arrived, buried in Maya Elridge's spam folder between a payday loan tease and an alumni fund plea. Subject, your grandfather? Cut through the 3 a.m. fog. She reread the message 3 times. Apologetic overture, frantic excitement, a blurry snapshot of page 7. The signature matched the framed exemplar above her mother's fireplace. Ping, her banking app, rent auto pay due in 48 hours. Balance, 172. She swore, tossed back cold brew, and told the fridge magnets, memorandum first, fried clowns later. 2 inhaler clicks steadied her lungs. Metro delays stretched the 13-minute ride to 27, long enough for her to skim every public mention of Alden P. Elridge, none citing a 1945 memo. She fired a message to the archivist, noon? Coffee by Loke? Then faced a Slack ping from her editor, Layla, mascot insomnia piece trending by noon or bust. Maya typed fine, bigger lead brewing, 48 hours? Layla answered with a single eye-roll emoji. Progress of a sort. Jonah, the not-so-anonymous archivist, waited outside Dolly Madison Coffee, latte sweating in one hand. He transferred a thumb drive. Phone scan. all I could get before the cameras blinked. She pocketed it. I'll need the original. A gulp. Staff entrance, 22:30. 20-minute window. At 10:30 p.m. she followed him through lemon-scent stairwells into stack sub B, heart hammering in unison with the inhaler canister she toyed in her pocket. He produced the Mylar sleeve, the carbon shimmered like bruised skin. Lights died, darkness gulped them, backup strips flickered unreliable amber, but they escaped. Outside, a street lamp stuttered, on, off, pause, on. She started the Civic. In the flash-dark flash, she thought she saw a sedan idling without headlights. Then nothing. She drove into DC's gutted hush. Sleep never came. Dawn found her cross-referencing the memo against the Bretton Woods Index, 42 missing citations. Someone had wielded a scalpel in 1945. She bought the cheapest Amtrak to New Hampshire, inhaler hissing between gate calls, and by afternoon, faced an immaculate archive box with a gutted center folder, Appendix C gone, Addendum 14 gone. The librarian's inventory showed no gap. Her tethered phone pinged Jamal al-Rashid, Saudi auditor, limp in left leg, offered matching ledgers. Originals in Riyadh. Video at 19 GMT, she agreed before courage faltered. That night in a Portland hotel, her laptop demanded a BitLocker key she'd never installed. Her USB backup folders showed nothing but blank directories. The recorder looped a mechanized voice reciting the memo's final line. To secure stability, the issuer must remain unseen. She texted Leela a scrambled warning, then caught Colonel Victor Kane at a veterans gala across the street. Her questions about missing annexes earned a peppermint-scented copy. Walk away. She didn't. Instead, she boarded a red-eye to Riyadh, yacht summit tape filling her earbuds. Kane's name surfaced in the memo, OSS liaison. Jamal met her at a Marriott cafe, prayer beads sliding across his wrist. By night, they infiltrated a ministry vault, photographing petrodollar ledgers while a stray warehouse cat played distraction. A private drone buzzed overhead. Security closed in. Jamal's homemade jammer won them 48-hour grace, enough to upload images before fleeing across industrial rooftops under sodium dawn. They drove west to a Wyoming data center that housed the suppression algorithm, Pathfinder. Inside refrigerated aisles, they installed Jamal's 7-kilobyte cul-de-sac of code, bought the world 49 hours of uncertainty, and camped beneath a numb sky where turbines turned like patient predators. Kane, bleeding from a shallow arm graze, confessed 30 years of justifying ugly men keeping the lights on. If code can't sweat, it shouldn't kill, he muttered, a cynic's first prayer. Leela had secured a stage at the Global Energy Forum. Jamal hobbled to a hotel suite with the ledger scans. Kane shadowed security. Maya, choking on imposter syndrome and laminate nerves, stepped to the lectern. She spoke of her grandfather's warning. When a handful controls price discovery, free societies pay in blood and silence. Screens behind her bloomed with the memo. Pathfinder struck back, hijacking every monitor, looping decades of accidents. Prospero Contractors, Meridian's black unit, moved to neutralize. Kane tackled a gunman on the mezzanine. Maya triggered the dead man switch. Data sprayed across devices, languages, continents, a dandelion in a gale. Delegates fled, but the files replicated faster than deletion. Kane, bleeding anew, hustled her through service corridors into Lila's waiting Skoda. Hashtags detonated before they cleared the Ringstrasse. By dawn, markets convulsed, commodities halted, Treasury blacklisted Prospero, Senate scheduled hearings. Kane surrendered to Walter Reed, silver stars locked in a mahogany box. Jamal, detained then released in Riyadh, watched students chant price graphs like psalms. Maya landed at Washington National, toggled her author visibility to off, and let the story run without her name. Layla's newsroom fielded injunctions and syndication bids. Keep writing, footnotes save lives, she told freelancers in hiding. Maya met her mother at Union Station. An anonymous cashier's check had paid the overdue rent. They shared cold Chinese and silence thick with relief. That night, Kane phoned a number memorized before Baghdad. "I finally did something harder than following orders," he said. "Come home when you can," came the answer. "Copy," he replied, and slept without a sidearm for the first time in years. Low tide on the Outer Banks exposed wet, quartz-flecked sand. 9-year-old Tegan Lawson found a scuffed flash drive glinting like fool's gold. She pocketed the treasure, unaware it held shadow copies of a memo that refused to drown. Somewhere in a server farm still reeking of burnt coolant, Pathfinder re-indexed corrupted sectors. Variables out of range, price spikes it could not model. It flagged the anomaly, queued a human oversight request, and waited, patient, blind, uncomprehending, while the tide it once controlled rolled back in, bearing secrets its algorithms could never silence. Thank you for choosing A Story Publishing.